I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest today is Dr. Jane A. Symington, who is the owner of Taking Flight International Corporation and the developer of both the Trauma Recovery Certification Program and the Grief Support Certification Program. As a therapist and professor, she combines her professional background in both nursing and psychology with her own experience of grief, trauma, growth, and transformation, along with an extensive knowledge of energy transfer healing, dream interpretation, art, and guided imagery to help and heal people of both genders across the lifespan and across cultures. Dr. Symington is a much-sought-after keynote presenter, focusing on her research and clinical interest in change and transition, dying, grief, and trauma, holistic health, personal empowerment, spiritual well-being, and team building with spirit. Her work is featured in her internationally sold books, Journey to the Sacred, Mending a Fractured Soul, and Setting the Captive Free. The booklet, Responding Soul to Soul, the award-winning film, Listen to Soul Pain, and Healing Soul Pain, and on the CDs, Journey to Healing and Transformation, Releasing Ties, Shielding the Light, Cloaked in Joy, and Retrieving Lost Soul Parts. In 2011, Dr. Symington was honored by Global Television as a Woman of Vision, by the YWCA as a Woman of Distinction, and by the Canadian Nurse as the Nurse to Know. More information is available at www.takingflightinternational.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Jane, and I look forward to hearing about your method of healing.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you. First, in both of your books, you ask your readers to expand their definition of spirituality. How do you define spirituality?
Well, I think the first thing is to understand that there can be a very big difference between religion mm-hmm. and spirituality. Mm-hmm. And so we're not talking about religion, the practices and the rituals, but spirituality to me is very much a journey, and I have come up with a definition that I call the three R's of spirituality. So the first R is going deep within to really remember that incredible essence that we are, that divine essence. Once we've taken off all the clay of our hurt and our grief, and we've been able to find that God essence within, we are able then to see outside of ourselves and into the second R, where we recognize that divine essence in other people. And as we journey forward and we begin to expand spiritually, we begin to also know or recognize that incredible divine spark within all. So for me, it's the remembering who we are, the reconnecting with other people, and then that whole resonating in that divine energy with all that's been created. And we become then much more aware that divine energy is within all.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned rituals and all of that. I sometimes think of religion as having all the answers and spirituality as searching for the answers.
Well, religion in many ways is very much a mind process. It's a thinking process. It's mm-hmm. trying to find the answers, where, as you say, spirituality is indeed mm-hmm. a very deep journey, and it's often a crisis that will drive us inward into that dark night of the soul experience to really begin to remember who we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jane, you talk about soul loss, and what is soul loss?
Well, Indigenous peoples, probably since ancient times, and I work a lot with Indigenous peoples around the world, have a very solid belief that when a tragedy happens, when a trauma happens, a significant grief, a part of us can flee. Now, in psychology, we can refer to that as a part of the self, but in more indigenous, more primal cultures, it's referred to as a loss of soul parts. And so I see that a lot when I'm working with people, and I've actually developed a way combining very many ancient practices, but a way that's more gentle and easy for modern therapists like myself to have the person go back and retrieve those parts of themselves. So until we do that, we are not whole and complete. So it's a powerful technique for every individual to understand and for all helpers to be able to do.
Jane, you state that there are two reasons why people have a difficult time moving forward in their healing journey. Can you describe one of those reasons?
Well, it's really important to understand that there are two reasons, and I talk about it as the down and under and the up and out. So in the down and under, one of the reasons that a lot of people aren't able to move forward is they have never really taken the time to acknowledge what it is they've lost. And so they move through life trying to avoid denying that these things have really happened to them. So many exercises that I do get people to really focus on what it is they've lost. And so when we do that, it's powerful because when we know what it is we've lost, we can get on with dealing with it. Yes. So that's the first.
Then, Jane, what can the reader hope to achieve by using the techniques described in your book, Setting the Captor Free, about ancient healing in modern practice?
Well, I am very free with giving people the strategies. Setting the Captive Free is very much a book about reclaiming our personal power. So our personal power for me is really staying fully connected in the light of oneness, the divine, whatever the language we use. And so I use many strategies in there and clearly describe them. So people who feel that they may have lost a part of themselves, I clearly describe in that, in Setting the Captive Free, how they can follow the steps that I give and claim some of those parts back. In there, I also describe how people can be shielded, because many people have a lot of difficulties that they walk through every day. And so I guide people and very clearly describe how they can put up a shield of light around them. Another exercise I clearly describe in there is how they can actually cut psychic cords. So psychic cords are attachments or energy, difficult energy that other people have attached to us. And we can feel that. We can feel that we're not clean, we're not clear, especially when we think about certain people or certain people are around. So I clearly describe an exercise and give very clear language to how people can cut that kind of energy and be more free. So there are many little rituals, ceremonies in there that I prescribe for people and clearly write the language that can be used. I give some art activities, which I have used with thousands of people, that are very simple and without a lot of materials that people can do to immediately move forward to find their purpose in life. So it's like a recipe book for really taking further steps to set us free, and much more than set us free, but move us to that higher place of our existence, that more divine place of our being.
Great. Now, Jane, can you tell us some of the techniques that you use for helping people overcome grief?
Absolutely. So the first I do is have people really acknowledge that. And that can sound difficult in the beginning, but it's truly very, very freeing. So I will have people actually do what I call a circle of significance. And I spend a fair amount of time with them in a very safe way. And they put down their losses. And we look at that and we talk about them. And then the second reason, and we didn't mention that earlier, but the second thing that people need to understand is that most people have done a fair amount of healing. And until we actually acknowledge that, we can think that we're still stuck in grief deeply, but we may actually be further along on our healing than we know. And so I have a large package or pile of stickers, beautiful stickers, and I will say to people, I want you to look at each of these sections on your wheel of significance, and I want you to think about each of those losses and tell me if you have done any healing in any of these sections. And they're always surprised because they probably have done some healing in all of them, or at least some of them, or most of them. And I say, I want you to take a sticker then, and I want you to put that on there, or stickers, mm-hmm. and tell me why that sticker and how that really describes the healing that you have done. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly affirming for people to know that they have actually come a long way on their healing journey. And from there, we can move with the losses that still need to be healed. So a second thing I do is I often ask people to describe their dreams, because our dream life is actually telling us a lot about what it is that we need to do next to move forward. Our dream life is also telling us a lot about how far we've come. So we may have some very powerful transformation dreams, like we may see ourselves, or we may see the birth of a divine child. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't mean we're pregnant. Right. It means that we have stepped forward into something new, and so I reward and I honor that. Another thing I may need to do is I may need to guide them to go back to that grief, because sometimes if the grief has been very tragic, we may have left a piece of ourself there. It may be in the funeral home, it may be in the intensive care unit, it may be at the car accident, and I gently guide them in a very safe way to pick up that part of themselves, mm-hmm. to nurture that part again, to bring that part home. So that's some of the beginning that we use, and so I do and I teach. And in all of my books and resources, I guide people that healing needs to be much more than just talk therapy. Mm-hmm. Soul loves ceremony. Soul loves ritual. Soul loves beauty. So we have to engage both sides of our brain, our right hemisphere as well as the left. I frequently encourage people, go and get some alternate methods of healing. I'm an energy practitioner, and so I understand and I know that grief isn't just contained within our brain. It's in every cell of our body, but it also radiates out into our energy field. And so we need to clean our aura. So I encourage therapeutic touch, Reiki, acupuncture, acupressure, massage, all of those things to heal the body, the mind, the soul, because it's all, grief affects every aspect of us.
Mm-hmm. Do you use sage?
Absolutely. We cleanse with sage. Mm-hmm. I cleanse the aura. We do all kinds of ceremonies. I work with cultures around the world. And so whatever their method is mm-hmm. to cleanse is mm-hmm. what we cleanse.
Great.
I just did some training in Greece. Mm-hmm. And instead of sage, we used basil.
Mm.
And it was a wonderful mm-hmm. experience for me, because basil smells beautifully. And when it's wet and we did a cleansing with the basil and water, it was beautiful. I will contain that smell memory probably for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many methods of cleaning the aura and whatever is right for us. And maybe we need to try new methods as well. When I worked in South America, we used eucalyptus mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. clean the aura.
Mm-hmm. I remember from the health spa, they always had eucalyptus. I think it was around the, it may have been the sauna or the hot tub or whatever they had, but eucalyptus was always one of the smells that you could identify.
Right, and so it not only cleaning the aura then, but also taking in the powerful healing of the aromatherapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Great.
That heals certain triggers in our brain as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Jane, would you tell us about your books, products, services, etc., and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, I have two books, Journey to the Sacred, Mending a Fractured Soul. Very empowering. It's been on the bestsellers list. People will find an incredible amount of healing in that if they have been through any difficult experience. We've talked about Setting the Captive Free, which is my second book. They're sold internationally. I have two videos which have both won awards nationally and internationally. So the first one is called Listening to Soul Pain, and the second one is Healing Soul Pain. I have multitudes of CDs. One is Reclaiming Parts of the Self, and we've mentioned that a little bit. One is Cutting Cords, and one is about bringing joy back into your life. So that one is letting go of that blanket of guilt and shame that we carry and to be able to feel joy and to feel that we are actually carrying joy. I have another one which is called Journey to Healing, which is helping people to ground, to shield, and to get into more of a meditative state. And so people can get these on Amazon.com, but they need to spell my name correctly. It's S-I-M-I-N-G-T-O-N. They can also get them on my website, which is TakingFlightInternational.com. And there are also many free articles and lots of information on my website. So once again, the website is TakingFlightInternational.com.
Well, I thank you very much, Jane. It's always nice to talk with a colleague, and especially one who is so creative and who has brought so many different techniques and concepts and theories into her practice to bring the best she can to her clients. So I congratulate you, and I'm really happy that I had the chance to interview you.
Thank you, Carl. It's been an incredible honor to get to know you a little bit and to chat with you.
Thank you.
I'm honored.
And now for a word about the new spring issue of A Distinctive Style magazine at www.adistinctivestyle.com. As usual, this issue is a gourmet delight of wonderful stories, music, and movies, so it is difficult to select a few to mention. I start with interviews with two well-known stars, Linda Gray of Dallas fame, who talks about what moves her and what keeps her moving, and the role of gratitude in her life. Then Anne Margaret talks about her life and love, her 45-year marriage, and her abiding faith in God, and how this has been a part of her life and career. Both are inspiring stories. It was great to see Jay-Z Knight and my interview with her. Jay-Z is the channel of Ramtha and is considered by many to be one of the most charismatic spiritual leaders of the modern age. She also made an appearance in another video on this issue. The interesting story of Jonas Elrod, who woke up one day and could see angels, demons, auras, and ghosts, and what this means for him. As a 38-year lung cancer survivor who used controversial natural products when given 6 months to live, I was immediately drawn to the article on a miracle cure for cancer, in which the author discusses the controversy around the natural product guanabanas and the successful experiences from clinical and research studies. Another area of interest as I get older is living a healthy life, and the article on Secrets of a Long Life from the 94-year-old who keeps busy with poker, bridge, and competing in bowling is an inspiration to me and to all. Last, not to be missed, is a violin performance of Estrellita by Charlie Siem and the song L.A. City sung by Connie Lim. You won't want to miss these and other stories, music, and videos in this issue of A Distinctive Style magazine at www.adistinctivestyle.com. My second guest, Nessa Lear, is a medicine woman, holistic nurse consultant, Reiki master, intuitive counselor, spiritual healer, sound healer, biodynamic breathwork practitioner, and shaman. Nessa holds degrees in nursing and integrative medicine. She has a private healing practice and offers workshops on meditation, breathwork, spiritual direction, and health and healing. During her years of nursing practice, she began intensive study with master healers over the years. NASA has earned 5 professional healing certifications in advanced energy medicine, sound healing, spiritual healing, and breath work, and is an ordained minister of the Oklavaha Native American Church of San Pete. Born with intuitive, empathic, and psychic sensitivities, NASA has spent over 30 years discovering what these gifts mean and how to use them, drawing on her experience from both conventional and holistic modalities. She serves her clients with a commitment to integrating the best of both worlds. NASA has created the Fifth Gate using her expertise to complement the mystery wisdom traditions she has received. Her commitment is to serve her clients for their own highest good. NASA is masterful at recognizing where her clients are holding on to elements that no longer serve and facilitating their release. This is true for physical dis-ease as well as emotional discord and ancestral conditions. More information is available at www.thefifthgate.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, NASA, and I look forward to hearing about how you practice with integrative medicine. Now, first, NASA, you're a nurse with a master's in integrative medicine, and why did you leave emergency room nursing and move into integrative medicine?
Well, I love nursing. I love working in healthcare and helping people. But I began to notice after years of working in an emergency room setting that there was almost like a revolving door for a lot of my clients. Mm-hmm. People would get ill. They'd come in acute situations. We're masters at managing acute health care. But we would just kind of mask the symptoms with medication or surgery and send them back out with no real guide towards mm-hmm. how to live a healthier life.
Mm-hmm.
And the system was very paternalistic, so that there was a lot less room for patients to question doctors or to ask for alternatives. There was a lot of bias at the time towards any complementary or alternative medicine, but I was curious about it because it seemed to me that there was more to being healthy and to being a human being in this world than just managing acute conditions with medications that make the symptoms go underground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then at a certain point while I was working, I was transporting a patient and I dislocated my shoulder and needed surgery to repair it. And the surgeon didn't do the surgery well. And the nerve roots going through my shoulder were crushed, leaving me with a central nervous system condition called RSD, which is a debilitating pain disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, the doctor kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, oh, well, learn to live with it.
Mm.
And over the years, there was a cascade of other symptoms that occurred as a result of this illness. And when I would go to the doctor and try and get help, their attitude really was, what are you bothering me for with this? I don't know what this is. And, mm-hmm. you know, they would get very defensive and almost project their frustration over not knowing onto me and make me kind of the bad guy for showing up with a disorder that wasn't in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that point that I started looking at complementary and alternative medicine in order to heal myself and then through that, other people.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it a shame, NASA, when they say live with it or they say, well, you've got this or that or the other thing, you're going to have this the rest of your life. I injured my back a few years ago and I went to the physical therapist. She got finished. She said, well, I'm finished. I said, but I still have back pain. Oh, she said, that's arthritis. She said, you'll have that the rest of your life. I said, look, I didn't have this 6 months ago. I don't expect to have it 6 months from now. I don't accept this. Well, then people told me about chiropractors, and so I went, and I got rid of the pain, and I don't have any pain now. But I wonder, how many people, when they say, well, live with it, or you've got arthritis, or you've got this or that, how many people just go along with that and suffer for the rest of their life when it's not necessary?
Right. Right. Yeah, it was really remarkable to me. It took, well, actually, I never really found anyone in the current system that could address
any of the chronic issues that this disorder created within me. And, you know, as I was out and about in life, of course, you start meeting other people and trading stories. And it's really profoundly shocking to me that the medical system just kind of abandons anybody with a chronic complaint because of their sense of impotency when it comes to rectifying the problem. And yet if we look at, you know, we can look at Ayurveda, you know, the Vedic system, we can look at Oriental medicine, we can even look at the Native American medicine wheel and see that there are systems out there that are tried over years and, you know, thousands of people, millions of people have used them with good relief, and yet we still refuse to incorporate any of those practices into what we do.
Well, it's the same with a lot of the integrative medicine. There have been cures for cancer since the 30s, but anyone that comes forward and has success with curing cancer, they call them a quack. And they take them to court. Because cancer is a multi-billion dollar industry.
It's amazing what a big business.
They don't want a cure out there. And so, you know, it's probably the same with a lot of these other modalities. They're helpful, but it doesn't line anyone's pocket.
Isn't that
because
they're all about wholeness. They're all about learning how to live life a different way.
Right.
And it's hard to market that.
But I think that the public are slowly demanding something different. Because the statistics for people using alternative are changing, and there's more and more. I think that when I did my book, about a third of all of the public had used some type of alternative interventions. So it's progressing slowly.
Yeah, I can see that in my practice. I oftentimes will recommend to someone, say, go see a neurologist, but I also want you to go see this acupuncturist. And they're more than willing to go see both, which I think is, you know, we should use the best of all worlds. Why not?
Well, I think sometimes what hampers the public is the insurance companies. They might pay for the neurologist, but they might not pay for the acupuncture. The same as they may pay for a traditional oncologist, but they might not pay for an alternative oncologist. So it's a matter of not only educating the public, but it's also a matter of changing some of the systems like the health insurance.
We need to really stand up as a nation and say we've had enough and to demand a more humane form of healthcare, because the insurance companies, it's not in their best interest to see us get well.
No, it isn't.
It's just not in their best interest. And, you know, my children's pediatrician comes to me all the time because she will prescribe a medication that they need, and then the insurance company won't cover it because there's a different brand that the insurance wants to use.
It's sad. Then, Anessa, on your website, The Fifth Gate, you talk about vibrational medicine. Can you explain what this is and how you use it?
Vibrational medicine is kind of a catch-all phrase for any kind of energy medicine. And energy medicine today would include energy medicine like Reiki. It would include sound. It would include, I believe, some of the indigenous medicines. Anything that uses either sound or energy in order to create healing. It really goes back to quantum physics, which gets really complex and is hard to tease out. But at the root of it, you know, science has been able to determine that all matter is energy and all energy is in motion. And when energy, one energy field or waveform makes contact with another, something always happens, and there is some form of change, and an imprint occurs that's very similar to memory. So that all energy is in motion, all energy is in contact with other moving energy forms, all forms retain the memory of everything that they've ever had contact with. It just makes this huge web of interconnectedness that scientists will describe as the unified field theory.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at anything with a waveform, we can include that in that. So when I talk about vibrational medicine, I'm talking about using different forms of conscious thought, sound, breath work, anything that hits that wave, to attune myself to the vibrational pattern of the client that I'm working with, and then from that place to reattune, because a higher form of energy will always capture a lower form of energy. So we can bring up the energy or create a more cohesive field, which is just a more regular, stable field that is able to function with greater ease and less expenditure of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm trying to really avoid a lot of the descriptors of the physics, because the physics gets so complex. So I guess that's pretty much the basic.
Okay. Then, Nessa, how do you integrate the different modalities into your healing practice?
Well, you know, again, if we start with the fact that we're all connected to the world around us and interact in complex ways, often unconscious ways, truthfully. And we can say that our bodies energetically respond, even on these unconscious levels, to our life experience and then adjust to the circumstances that we find ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
These experiences over time are going to leave energetic imprints within our energy body, within our field. And they're at the root of some of the health issues we have, our emotional states, even our sense of satisfaction and vitality can kind of be thought of in terms of having these energy blocks that are placed in our system by the things that we come in contact with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So all the modalities that I use are forms of vibrational healing, and they attune to different aspects of a person's field to help reorder the field into a more organized, regular pattern, which allows greater levels of health to occur.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, the sound healing. Mm-hmm. Sound healing is just this absolutely wonderful device that very few people think of including in whatever work that they're doing. And it's so simple and it's so easy because you can think about a problem that someone is presenting and almost hear a note or a pitch that would kind of complement it or identify it.
Mm-hmm.
And either toning it just vocally or by using different pieces of equipment, sometimes you can shake up that block in the field and release whatever has been bound up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people report remarkable results after having some of these healings done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes I'll even use tuning forks and use them on the meridian systems, and they'll travel through the meridian systems.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just extraordinary. It's beautiful to watch, and it's a beautiful experience to have because it brings you into such a profoundly deep sense of relaxation.
Mm-hmm. Do you use music?
I do oftentimes use music. I use music either directly or indirectly.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, I think that really if you're going to call yourself a shaman, you have to know how to both sing and dance.
Mm-hmm. And do you?
Yeah,
you
do. I do. It's, I don't think I'd ever want to get up on stage, but
oh, mm-hmm.
When the time is right, I think the music kind of moves through me rather than me moving it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's a way oftentimes of calling in consciousness thoughts that you couldn't really call in any other way.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, then, you're also a medicine woman and shaman. Can you tell us a little bit about indigenous healing practices and how they fit in modern healing practices?
Sure. No, I think that this is one of the best-kept secrets in the modern world. You know, obviously, the indigenous, having survived to this day, had to have done something right.
Right.
And I think that, you know, the system that they have for healthcare is just so inclusive. You know, our Western system is very mechanistic. You know, it comes from kind of like Newtonian science where man kind of had to wrestle control over nature.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much more to the natural world and to us. And oftentimes, you know, again, we're talking, we can ultimately talk about resonance fields, which gets back to the unified field theory and vibrational medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So, and oftentimes, too, when you become a shaman, you know you're a shaman from the time you're very little. It's not necessarily a mantle that someone places on your shoulders initially, as it is a way that you learn to respond to the world.
Mm-hmm.
So a shaman is very attuned to the environment around him or her. And using shamanic medicine can be anything from giving someone a task to do that you think will help them to providing them with recommendations for plant medicines that would help heal their body or diets that might be better for them to eat or, you know,
mm-hmm.
health habits including sleep and exercise. It's all those things. And it includes even more. It expands out to the greater circle of community and relationship and the give and take between people within, you know, the same village or town. There needs to be a relationship that we need to develop to take care of ourselves, because we can't be healthy if we don't try and help everybody be healthy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then it expands out even further from that. It's the environment that supports us, that keeps us alive, that allows us to have food and water and, you know, the things that we need. And everything that exists has a resonant field, which, you know, a shaman would call by a spirit name, and a mystic may call by a physical name.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a scientist is going to give it a resonant field pattern, but they're all the same things. If I can speak to the wind when wind energy is required because I need to open something up,
mm-hmm.
and clear something out and draw in something new,
mm-hmm.
I could use, you know, the energy of the growing things if I want someone to be attracted more towards reaching towards the light.
Mm-hmm.
And finding their own way, so that there are many different ways to bring in the shamanic piece. And I don't think that it means I have to give up my science background. I don't think it means that I have to forget my chemistry and my, you know, there are rules that apply, and I think we can incorporate all of them if we're willing to be less judgmental and if we're willing to develop an art that includes using what's called for at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this is all very interesting, Nisa. And can you tell us about your services and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, that's pretty easy. You can reach me through thefifthgate.com, mm-hmm. my website.
Mm-hmm.
My services, you know, on my website, I kind of have them listed out separately. I'm a Reiki master. I can do energy medicine. I can do the shamanic practice. I am certified breathwork practitioner, which combines pranayama and bioenergetics in a really brilliant system of healing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Kabbalist, so I use the ancient Jewish mystical texts for
mm-hmm.
healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can work, obviously, as a nurse consultant, but they've really all kind of blended.
Mm-hmm.
I'm highly intuitive, so when I work with someone at this point, I pretty much listen as deeply as I can to determine what it is that's needed in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then with all these tools in the toolbox, I can pull out whatever it is that's necessary to do the work that's needed.
Mm-hmm. Can you work with people over the phone, or do they have to come in person?
Most of my clientele are distance. I've worked with people in Europe. I've worked with people mm-hmm. in Brazil. I work with people around the United States and Canada.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so they would just get in touch with you and then set up an appointment, and then you would talk
mm-hmm.
on the phone?
Yep, through the website, and then we'll get in touch.
Oh, great, good. Well, is there anything else you would like to say, Nessa, then, before we close?
Well, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity, and I would just urge everyone that's listening to be mindful, learn your body, listen deeply, understand what you need, and don't let anyone tell you that it's something different than that.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you know is right for you, and do not be deterred. And in the process, use your voice so that the politicians making all the policy understand that we're all ready for a bigger change than they think we are.
Good. Thank you very much. My third guest, Laura Banco, has a BA in communications from William Patterson University and has been working as a feng shui consultant for the past 10 years. She is trained and mentored with many world-renowned feng shui masters, is a Red Ribbon member of the International Feng Shui Guild, and is the feng shui correspondent and home expert for the weekly television show Live It Up. Laura appears every Friday morning on the magazine-style inspirational show Live It Up at WLNY Channel 1055, delivering feng shui segments in a clear, concise, and compelling manner. In its fourth season and soon to be syndicated, Laura's segments are the viewer's favorite and have received an enormous amount of positive feedback. Laura has feng shui'd everything from the largest private residence in Manhattan to a trailer in the Florida Keys. She contributes to several home and decorating magazines, has been featured on Martha Stewart Living Radio, The Nate Berka Show, and has lectured around the country. In the spring of 2012, Laura will be teaching feng shui and interior design and feng shui and architecture at Pratt in New York City. More information is available at www.bankofengshui.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Laura, and I look forward to hearing about feng shui. How would you explain feng shui?
Well, it literally means wind and water, and it goes back to ancient China when the farmers learned to harness these forces of nature just by situating themselves in the best possible way so that they would have prolific crops. And when they had a lot of crops and abundance of food, that would mean good health, it would mean wealth, and ultimately happiness. So these same primordial concepts can be applied today by looking at the psychology, the beauty, and the health of your surroundings.
Mm-hmm. Then, Laura, what are the top three things that people can do in their homes to improve their health?
The first one would be to minimize the EMFs in your bedroom. In your bedroom, we spend a lot of time sleeping, healing, rejuvenating, and EMFs are quite dangerous to us when we bombard ourselves with an excessive amount of them. And they stand for electrical magnetic fields. And basically, it's the electronic radiation that comes off of any type of electronic appliance or device. So we're looking at your alarm clocks, your battery chargers, your TVs, your computers, electric blankets. So when you sleep in your bedroom, it's best to really minimize your electronic footprint. Try to keep, if you must have an alarm clock and you can't use a battery-operated one, then try to keep it at least 30 inches away from your head. So that's my first one. My second one would be to take off your shoes before you enter the house. According to the EPA, you can cut down on 85% of the dirt in your home, and that includes the lead-borne particles. So simply by taking off your shoes, you're making a big step towards a cleaner and a healthier home. And the third tip, let's see, would probably be bring in nature. Get rid of anything that's like dried flowers or plastic flowers. Just surround yourself with vibrant life forces, and you'll feel more vibrant. You'll feel more energized.
Great. Now, Laura, why is symbolism so important in our homes?
This is my favorite layer in this ball of wax of feng shui, because it's the psychology of how we dwell. It's how our subconscious is telling our stories, because every item that we surround ourselves with is energetically imbued with a meaning. Either it's going to lift us up or it's going to do the opposite. So look around at all the items that you're purposely choosing to surround yourself with. Those are your artwork, your collectibles, things like that. And so you really want to make sure that everything that you're surrounding yourself with are things that you truly love, that uplift, inspire, that motivate you, that heal you, that fulfill you. And like take your bedroom, for example. If you're having trouble sleeping and you go into your bedroom and you see that you're surrounding yourself with fast-moving imagery, like maybe crashing waves or pictures of sport cars, or you have a pile of work next to your bedstand or exercise equipment. These are all subconsciously really giving you a lot of fast-moving energy. And you want to really create the tone in your bedroom, especially, of it being a place where you could really rest. And so my advice would be to take a look at the symbolism of what you're surrounding yourself with. Ask yourself, do I really love this? Or am I holding on to this because someone gave it to me and I feel obligated to keep it? And if you surround yourself with things that you feel obligated to keep or that you don't even like, you'll be walking around angry and you won't even know why. So our symbolism really affects our well-being.
How does clutter impact on our health?
Clutter impacts our health greatly because it's impeding the flow of energy throughout our homes, which in turn is doing the same to ourselves. So clutter jams up the healthy flow of chi, of energy, throughout our bodies, and it also affects our mental health. If you're having trouble with clarity, you can't seem to focus. You know, it's reasonable to understand that if you're surrounding yourself with a lot of disorganization, then you're going to have a lack of clarity. So the first thing that you can do is clean off your surfaces. Because if, you know, in feng shui, clean surfaces symbolize clarity of thought. So it's a good thing to do if you're feeling overwhelmed or confused or you just can't focus. Clean your surfaces, clean your windows, clean your mirrors. It'll really help you get clear.
Then what can we do to feel more energized?
Well, in addition to getting rid of the clutter, you could, you know, get rid of all the dried plastic flowers. Get the air circulating in your home. Crack a window. Use an air purifier. You don't want stagnant air, that stagnant energy, stagnant chi. It's not healthy. Increase the lighting in your home. By upping the wattage, you could really up your own energy. Use aromatherapy like lemon and citrus. They have they've been proven to lift your spirits and energize you. And then make sure that all the symbolism in your surrounding is also energizing. Let's say you're feeling alone and you look around and you realize that all of the symbolism in your artwork or your photographs are all single imagery. So you want to then start to realize that, heighten your awareness, and surround yourself with maybe items and twos. And the last thing would be probably clean out under your bed. That will really help you feel more energized. Because when you sleep, you want the energy flowing underneath you smoothly and clearly. And if you have a lot of stuff under your bed, that's energetically resonating to you while you're sleeping. And don't forget to let go of stuff that you no longer use. You want to surround yourself with only the things that you truly love. And often we hold on to items out of fear. Fear of not having enough. Fear of trying to insulate ourselves from a cold world out there. Fear of feeling that if we get rid of something, we lose a part of ourselves. But it's important to realize when to let go. And to honor the things that you truly cherish.
Laura, what do you think of the negative ion machine?
A negative ion machine. Well, I think it's important to really do your research and get one that is really going to be healthy for you and not be in like, especially ones that are encased in plastic, that also there's a lot of off-gassing with plastic. So it's important to do research with that.
Now, I see that you're on Martha Stewart's show. And
Yes, I was on her Radio Sirius program.
And did you talk about feng shui there?
Yes, Yeah. I talked about feng shui, and that was really interesting, and I gave some really insightful tips. I was also on the Nate Berkus show, and right now I'm writing a book about, it's called Feng Shui Now, and it's bringing some of the ancient principles of this ancient art of placement and bringing it into the 21st century in fresh and modern ways.
And I see also that you're going to be doing something at Pratt.
Yes, this is really exciting. I'm teaching licensed architects and interior designers feng shui, and it's great to kind of teach this somewhat esoteric subject in a way that people can really wrap their brains around and understand. And I'm delighted that it's becoming so much more mainstreamed right now, that it's included in curriculums of many important schools. And people can get more information about that by going to my website, which is benkofengshui.com.
Would you repeat that?
Yes, and I'll spell it. It's B-E-N-K-O F-E-N-G-S-H-U-I.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter, and my handle is at Benko Feng Shui.
Now, are you available for services to people?
Yes, I do consultations all the time. And I travel around the country, and I give lectures. My website has my latest list of lectures for 2012 and 2013, and I'm available for consultations. That's one of my favorite things to do. I love to go into people's homes and really be able to connect the dots for them between whatever their challenges are in life and how it's physically manifesting in their space.
Well, this has been very interesting, Laura, and I appreciate it very much, and I know it'll be helpful. It's an area that has not been covered on my show before, and so it's new information to all of the listeners. So I thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me, Carl. I love the work that you do. It's really important, and keep it up.
Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I hope you learned something of value in this show. I invite you to my website, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the previous shows available for free listening under the blog. You can also sign up for a free monthly newsletter on healthy holistic aging and find a few ebooks, a CD, and my last book on healthy holistic aging for sale. My next series that will start about August or September will be on natural interventions for cancer. If you are a cancer survivor who use natural interventions, I would like to hear from you for possible inclusion in this series. Send me an email through my website. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great week.